Security status has been raised to level 1. I want to know what every person is doing before they do it. I want to know what every person is saying before they say it. I want to know what every person is thinking before they think it. Star City is now on the front line. So, let's begin.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 617 for the week of June 1st, 2026. I am nice hot kettle of coffee, David T. Cole, and I'm here with traditional tire pee, Sarah D. Bunting.
Copy Star City, leak check in progress.
My eagle tire, Ariana. And single space audio surveillance support, Sophie Brookover.
My kingdom for a more competent Stasi agent.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we get into today's topic, a little bit of site business. Thanks to George, a.k.a. Jovial Gent on the Discord, we have started our Pride Month gift exchange for all you EHG listeners. Here's how it works. We're already signed up here, but you can join in at the Elfster list. Yes, Elfster, but the elf works all year long. That link is in the show notes. Sign up deadline is June 10th, after which you will get who you are buying your gift for. And then there is a $20 to $30 limit on it. And you are encouraged in your wish list not to put items, but just to put things like my favorite color of the rainbow is. And then that's the sort of gift that somebody will get you. Give them general guidance without actually giving particular items. So once again, that is in your show notes. We'd love to have you on board for that. The deadline is June 10th to sign up.
Thank you, Dave. Now, she is a pop culture writer and one of the two bossy dames of newsletter fame. We're welcoming her to Extra Hot Great for the first time.
Yay.
It's Sophie Brookover.
Welcome,
Sophie.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Sophie pitched herself for Star City, and that is in fact what we're talking about. In the counter-historical world of For All Mankind, the first nation to land a person on the moon was the USSR. We've already watched the ripple effects that had in counter-historical NASA. Now it's time to see what followed in the counter-historical Soviet Union. Chief designer Sergei Korolev, Reese Evans, I'm never sure how to say his last name, is eager to take the next step by mounting a manned mission to Venus. But Premier Leonid Brezhnev wants to establish a permanent base on the moon instead. Meanwhile, intelligence officers are listening to important targets and passing on everything they say to Ludmila Roskova, Anna Maxwell Martin, formerly known as the Night Witch during the Second World War because of all the Nazis she killed, and now she's the head of Star City's KGB surveillance department. When an intelligence report sidelines a lady astronaut, another is hastily shoved into her place, which is how Anastasia Belikova, Alice Englert, unexpectedly finds herself getting accelerated cosmonaut training and a lot of other major life changes she probably did not anticipate when she joined the program. The show is created by Ben Nadivi, Matt Wolpert, and For All Mankind creator Ronald D. Moore. Two episodes dropped May 29th on Apple TV, with the remaining six in the season dropping once a week on Fridays. We got access to the first five, but we'll be careful about spoilers for future episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. Sophie, should our list... I almost said Sophie. Not Sophie yet. Sophie.
Welcome, comrade, to the show.
Sophie! Should our listeners watch Star City?
Yes.
Sarah.
I have a couple of little quibbles, but overall, yes, totally.
Dave.
Yep.
Yes, for me as well. Let's get into it.
Exciting update for you, Tara.
Please.
Evans.
All right.
It's like Evans, but because it's Welsh, there's like extra mustard on there.
Yeah, Evans. Mm-hmm. And I'm hurt as the person of Welsh lineage here on the show. They didn't ask me because, of course, I know Welsh.
Uh-huh. I heard someone say Evans this weekend. That's why I thought I had possibly been
wrong. It's very close to Evans, Dave, if you stuck an F in between the E and the V.
Right.
This has been Welsh Language Report. <I'll stop.
laughs> When we talked about season five of For All Mankind in April, we all kind of agreed it had ended up somewhere a lot sillier than where it started. Is a hard reset to the 60s and pretty soon in the season, the 70s, what the franchise needed. Sophie, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I think so. For people who watch For All Mankind, I'm moving my brain backwards, yeah. like many decades, trying mm-hmm. to remember what was going on. And of course, I'm not rewatching season one of For All Mankind, but my recollection of it is that that is, even though it's like in, I guess, the first Nixon administration, when that season opens, it has a very Eisenhower-y look. Like everything is super shiny and affluent, and isn't it wonderful and triumphalist? Mm-hmm. And they simply cannot believe that the Soviets got to the moon first. Meanwhile, here, back in Star City, you'd think that they would be celebrating a little bit more, but it's so grim and gray and olive green and black and visually grainy mm-hmm. and in just a completely different storytelling idiom. It really feels fresh.
Mm-hmm. It is a nice contrast for All Mankind. I will say, I wish they peeled back exactly what you're saying a little bit. Me and Tara, we watched the show Ponies, which I thought did a good job of showing mm-hmm. how different life is, but not 100% completely miserable life could be in the Soviet Union at the time. Did we have colors in the Soviet Union beyond your drab earth tones? Probably, but not in this show.
Yeah.
Like, and I realize they're setting a mood, but it seemed a little disingenuous at times.
Yeah.
It was like the silo wardrobe department. It was yeah. like, oh, a slightly lighter brown. Is this our heroine?
Yeah, we don't have wood, only concrete. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Sarah, was this one of your quibbles, the look and feel, or what were the quibbles that you had with it?
No, I mean, I had a little bit of a quibble in theory with the fact that, like, it is doing that Apple TV thing where it's like, look how much money we spent on making everything look so drab and chilblainy and hangnail-y. But I didn't care. Like, I barely took any notes because I was just immersed and remembering what made For All Mankind so fascinating in the beginning mm-hmm. was the reimagining of a world that already existed, but at right after the doors slid. And I feel like this is just an excuse for these producers to go back to For All Mankind fans who bailed after the duct tape incident and were like, okay, enough already. Like, this is a soap opera. They strapped Kelly to an air conditioner. Check it off, Dave. I mentioned it. We're out, but they would come back for this. But I don't care. Like, yeah, it's a big justification to, you know, recast everybody and go back in time and start over. But I don't care. It works for me. And I think they did a great job casting Anna Maxwell Martin from Bletchley, always one of my faves. I don't feel like I see her enough. I would have kept Niamh Alger, who plays the compromised Lady Cosmonaut.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Over the one that I can't remember her name.
Alice Englert.
Englert. She's good, but she looks enough like Claire Foy that it's super distracting, and I keep expecting her to be like, hello, you. So that's like a teeny quibble, but all of the things that are sort of like, well, it's doing that Apple TV thing, like, yeah. that's not always bad. Sometimes it's very pleasurable. I like an immersive production design, and I think they did a good job constructing these early plots and these early action sequences, and it's well cast. I'm sure it's a little cynical in the inception, but who cares? It was a fun sit so far.
I mean, I realize they need to plant their flag in the sand and say this is what this show is compared to what came before it, and that's why it is such a vibe at the start, why yeah. we are at maximum Sovietness. I get it. I just kind of wish they could peel that back a little bit. But one of the things that makes this show quite different, at least to me, from For All Mankind, is For All Mankind was very much, at the start, there was a ton and ton and ton of space race process. And I mm-hmm. think because they showed us all that in For All Mankind, the choice here was, well, this is going to be more of the psychological impact of this profession inside mm-hmm. of this regime. So there's a little bit of that death of Stalin machinations here that mm-hmm. you're like, oh, really? That's going to happen to this character just because? Oh, okay, I see. So it is smartly done in that, you know, the Venn diagram, it is actually a Venn diagram. They're not just doing the Soviet version of For All Mankind. There is some process here, not a lot in the first two episodes. In the third episode, we start getting into some stuff about the program that is quite interesting and has a sort of its own process plot line going, which I thought was nice to see as a progression of it. But it is different enough at its core that it feels, as Sophie was saying, something fresh while still being familiar.
Yes. Or Better Call Saul. Like, there's enough the same signposting, but it's like just a slightly different vibe and back in time again. And it's like, okay, well, Breaking Bad had started to curdle a little for me and just in terms of like the discourse. And starting over was welcome and following the story from there.
Despite being set in the Soviet Union, the show is in English with everyone using their real accents, like in the movie Amadeus or the Chernobyl miniseries or Warrior. What do we feel about this choice that they didn't cast Russian actors or make English and Welsh actors learn Russian? Sophie?
Yeah, no, I think this was definitely the right move. Actually, one of my friends asked me, oh, so is it like all subtitled? Is it all in Russian? And I was like, nope, they made a very smart choice and decided to, like, I think you have to make the show legible and reduce obstacles to pressing play.
Yeah.
Right. The idea. And I think that's one big way they did it. The other is, and I think we're sort of dancing around it, like, you do not have to have watched For All Mankind.
No,
in order
to
watch and be completely immersed in this show. It stands alone. You know, every time someone comes on screen who I know is going to pop up later, I'm like, yay. But that's not, you know, you don't have to have that experience. And honestly, just seeing Agnes O'Casey, who I love seeing in this particular type of role. She plays Irina, who winds up coming to For All Mankind, I think, in the fourth season. Everything I have seen her in, she has played this sort of like slightly posh rat-faced schemer. She's so good at it. I love it.
Yeah, I think the only time it's really worked for me is Shogun, just because that is part of the gist.
Yeah,
right?
Well, the language is part of the story. Yeah,
yeah, you are isolated. You don't know what's going on, and that just sells into it. But otherwise, it usually is just putting on airs.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and they apparently asked Chernobyl creator Craig Mazin, like, "Well, what should we do?" And he's like, "Just cast it in English. Don't do this to yourself, especially at this particular moment in global history as well and relations."
Yeah.
Just do what you can do.
Send work to them? No, thank you.
Well, it also, I mean, I think Mazin made the decision and encouraged the decision for practical reasons, like you were just saying, Sarah. But I think it also can be read as, gosh, the Soviet Union was a really enormous country. And, you know, Russian was the common language. But people from all these different Soviet socialist republics were speaking the language that their grandparents would have been speaking as well. So, of course, there's going to be a lot of regional accent differences.
Yeah.
Alice Englert does not use her normal voice, like her normal accent, because
she's from New Zealand. She's New Zealand. She's Queen.
Oh, that would have been great. All right. I want the secondary audio programming with that intact, please. Thank you.
Yeah. She's also Jane Campion's daughter. So if her getting the bigger part over the other one is part of a campaign to bring Jane Campion over to Apple TV, we'll see if it works. What's crazy about Anna Maxwell Martin is that I believe her as much playing Lizzie Bennett in Death Comes to Pemberley or the female lead of the cozy mystery Ludwig as I do her playing the Night Witch. Sarah, you already brought up the Bletchley Circle. What did you feel about her here?
I think this was brilliant because I immediately, it was like the first note I actually did take was like, Bletchley lady? Always happy to see Bletchley ladies and talk about an immersive production design. She had that sort of Balls of Steel thing, but subverted in Bletchley Circle. And here it's much more, you see it glinting all the time, even when the power is out in this world. But she does have a way of sort of going back and forth across the line of like too much battle axe that I think is exactly what this role calls for.
She's always doing several things at once. She genuinely wants Irina to come with her. This is in the second episode, to come with her to Berlin. to speak with this captured potential double agent. Because she wants to hear Irina's allegedly excellent German. Mm-hmm. She also wants to test Irina. She also wants to intimidate the Stasi, who, in her opinion, like, she's bored and annoyed that they have not gotten this guy to crack yet. She's like, I cannot believe that I'm going to have to go there. Like, I'm in Paris. You're telling me I need to schlep to Berlin to crack this guy for you. I, a woman, I'm fine.
I wanted to go to the Folies Bergères, but fine.
But no, exactly. So she has to schlep all the way to Berlin. But she's so, I love how efficient she is about it. Like, yes, she's there to break this guy, but also she's here to hear Irina's German. And also she's here to think about, like, well, what if I leave Irina in the room with him for a minute? Like, I wonder what will happen. I've already told her that she's too soft. Like, she would not shoot that lady cosmonaut in the head.
And she knows that I will do it. So she'll do what she has to do to try to save this guy's life. She tells herself. But like, there's no ethical interrogation under communism. So
sure.
Right.
But it is interesting. And then she shows you enough wheels turning.
Yep.
But it's not like you see her on the other side of the door, like twirling her imaginary mustache. Like she just sets it up. And then you watch Irina think about it.
Yeah. And Irina is right in the sense that dousing this guy with scalding water is monstrous, but it will get the information out of him. And also, it's not being shot in the head.
Small mercies. Real small. No,
real small. As I'm always saying.
Considering that Wernher von Braun is the chief designer's NASA counterpart and also a Nazi, ex-Nazi, I guess, Korolev was a lot more sympathetic to me. What did everyone else think of him and of Rhys Ifans' performance? We'll go to Dave first for Welsh solidarity.
Sure. I thought he was very effective. He's there for the science. He's not there for the politics of it. He's obviously very passionate about his craft. And I like the character. He's got a soft, fed up-ness to him that plays very well. He is as angry as he can be while tiptoeing around everything. It is this very sort of soft, simmering, not boiling anger to his character. And that lets some softness through when it comes to relations with his staff. When one of his astronauts is now famous and now has to do the publicity tour, probably forever, he is very sympathetic to that. And he's just like, well, you know, it's better than the alternative, which, you know, I'll just put that on the table. We'll just let that be.
Also, between him and Joanna Page on Taskmaster, Welsh accent really having a moment. I liked him, too. Calling the cosmonauts my eagles was, like, oddly touching. It reveals a lot about sort of what he got into this for and what his feelings are in terms of protectiveness toward the cosmonauts.
And then in episode 3, which we're not going to be talking about today, you really see what his values are and what he's in the game for, which I thought was great.
Belikova, who ends up being the first woman to walk on the moon so far, has the most dynamic role. I last saw Alice Englert, speaking of range, playing the young Catherine de Merteuil in the Starz prequel to Dangerous Liaisons. So this is a very different role.
Yeah.
I thought the miracle of this performance is that she outacts her terrible wig, but what did everyone else think, Sophie?
I really like her performance and arc in the episodes that follow these first two. I felt this irritation with her for getting selected for this mission. And then when she was finally on, like, you know, she's gutsy and she's actually on the surface of the moon, things started to unlock for me a little bit with her. A little bit rough for me, the first two episodes, but I got fully on board.
I thought her hair was just bad Soviet hair products.
It could just look
that way.
Yeah.
One has to wonder, what even do they have access to? Who knows?
Yeah.
She's also one of two second-generation showbiz kids in this production. Ruby Ashbourne Serkis, who plays the music teacher, and cosmonaut wife Tanya is Andy Serkis's daughter.
Sure.
When I saw she was born in 1998, I was like, she looks real old. They did a good job aging her up to be from Soviet times, because I would not have guessed that. But
when she was sort of crawling over the ceiling of the hotel room, you could really see the resemblance.
We've already talked a bit about Agnes O'Casey playing Irina Morozova, a new recruit in the surveillance office. I, for one, appreciate seeing recapping represented on TV, because let's be real, that's what they're doing. Sarah, what were your thoughts about this?
They did leave it to the professionals.
Thank you.
As people who also interview industry professionals, as part of our jobs, the painstaking transcription process that we all used to endure before Rev.com, it was giving me flashbacks, and not necessarily in a good way. Yeah, I felt a kinship with my co-host, Dave, looking at all this like mid-century Soviet office equipment and just the rows of these covers that looked home sewn, but also were very beautiful for these typewriters. I didn't mind the three-tone production design because that's half of my office. Just, you know, not the Soviet versions.
It was very elegant in its way. Like the perfect symmetry of those two rows of typists and the uniformity of their desks and the layouts and then like all the... I mean, I just love office supplies. Yeah. So.
And coming from Mad Men rewatch that I'm in the middle of, and just like the difference between the lightness and color, and that at this same in this same period to find anything that was not robin egg blue in housewares and women's wear was rather difficult. Like a lot of blue and sea foam, and then there it's all just like soil. So. Yeah.
Just warning you, Sophie, I just love office supplies. It's going to make it to the soundboard. It's gonna...
Fantastic.
Okay, great.
Fantastic. I'm honored, truly.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
Guys, I almost forgot.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
Star City. All right. Enough of that. It is now time for Around the Dial. We're going to start with Tara. What have you been watching on TV recently? People need to know about Bad.
Well, it is a spectacular time to be a fan of panel shows. Taskmaster Original is winding up its 21st season. Guy Montgomery's Guy Mont Spelling Bee Australia is back for season 3. Taskmaster Australia is in season 5. I think a lot of fans of all of these shows were excited for a sitcom called New Zealand Spy from New Zealand Taskmaster's assistant Paul Williams, although we in this house bailed after episode 1, and by in this house, I mean me, Dave pre-bailed, and I don't think I would have finished the season premiere if not for my love of Rose Matafeo. Because New Zealand Spy was such a dud, I was a little nervous about Sam Campbell's new sitcom, Make That Movie, which premiered last week. I did fly to England to see it. Dave did as well. I think we're both glad we did. Make That Movie is a mockumentary in which Sam Campbell plays Sam Campbell, director of movies like Funny Wedding. Every week, an ordinary person writes in with their idea for a movie that they want him to make, and Sam's team pulls together to do it. Unfortunately, for the podcast medium, a lot of the best jokes are visual, revolving around things like a big scab on the forehead of elderly camera operator Winnie, or a flash to Sam modeling for the brand that provided his outfit for a movie premiere, or another runner from the first episode that kept going so long I was weeping while we watched it. I will not spoil it. There's another part where he's trying to join a fancy country club and they're like, well, we, of course, will have to do a background check. And he pulls out his phone and shows the background.
Oh, no.
Which is champagne. So I assume it works. But anyway, to give you a not too spoilery sense, here is the pitch for the movie in the first episode from a guy named Mick Holt from Sherburne Dale. Let's hear the clip.
What if there was a movie about a man and a woman who could turn into snakes? But only one of them is a snake at a time. They're never together as two humans or as two snakes. One of them is always a snake. And they just swap around.
What do you reckon? Let's make that movie.
That takes us into the credits, which are so budge. I mean, you can hear a little bit of the panpipe theme song, but like the title treatment looks like it was from, I'm going to say, 1987, maybe?
Yeah, it's got a very Windows Movie Maker kind of feel to it. Yeah. Corel Draw in there somewhere.
Yes. So what ends up happening is they come to town and they cast in the two leads the people that run Mick's father's old photocopy shop, who are not actors, and things go as well as you would think. Because also, this is not a concept that the Make That Movie team has the time or budget to pull off with any competence. Yeah. When they have to, you know, get snakes to play the snakes, they're like, well, which ones do you want? You have to pick. I don't know. Can't we just get a bucket and then you see a bucket of snakes? So you'll have to fly to England and see how things go. But Dave, you also watched this show.
Yeah, I don't know if I would recommend it to anybody, not because I didn't think it was very funny, very, very funny at times, but it's such an acquired taste that I would be hesitant to say you absolutely must watch this. I think if you have crossed paths with Sam Campbell before, you know whether you want to watch this or not, because the energy of this is very much the same energy he's been bringing to all the panel shows you've been talking about. It's uneven. The first episode is really good. Overall, it was worth my time. So if you've enjoyed the antics of Sam Campbell, I think this will be more of that and you will like it. And if you haven't enjoyed it, do not watch it.
Yes. And if you want more of his antics and getting to do more stuff than he did on Taskmaster, where I think he was pretty reserved, this season of Guy Montgomery's Guy Mont Spelling Bee Australia, where he is the new sort of assistant host. He has been completely insane from second one.
Yeah. No disrespect to Aaron Chen, but upgrade.
Who's also in Make That Movie, by the way, and very good. But yes, he's on another level in this season. For my plug, I talked about Maximum Pleasure Guaranteed last week. And as promised, I did write about it for GQ, and we will link that in the show notes.
All right, Sophie, what do you got for us?
I got two, which are The Tower. There's three seasons of it, ran from 2021 to 24. Those are on BritBox. And that is basically noir. It's flirting with noir. It's noir curious.
Okay.
British crime procedural about, you know, this something terrible happens on the tower, like this massive apartment tower block, and a police officer and a young, like, teenage girl fall from the top of that tower. And Gemma Whalen comes in and has to figure out, like, well, why? Why were they there at all? Why did they fall? Did someone jump? Was someone pushed? Who can say? The person who can say is everyone who Gemma Whalen, like, interrogates with abandon. It's really, she is so dogged. She will just pursue the baddies, even if they are, wait for it, some of her own colleagues.
What?
I know, it's shocking. So I just really, really love an incredibly bleak crime procedural, and I'm really language agnostic. Like, I will also, I love a straight up, like, Scandinavian noir as well. I recently watched Detective Hula, starring your most favorite actor, Dave, Joel Kinnaman.
Oh, great.
So when I'm watching one of those, I also need to alternate with something incredibly silly or heartwarming. And Deli Boys season 2 manages to do a lot more of the former, but also a little bit of the latter, which I appreciate about it. It is just the goofiest. These two, like, absolute losers. Their father dies. They inherit his corner store in Philadelphia. Sure, it's in Philadelphia. Definitely shot in Toronto or Chicago. You know, find themselves managing his massive cocaine dealing empire. But of course, they can't really do it without the assistance of their incredibly stylish and rather maniacal lucky auntie, played by Poorna Jagannathan, who's wonderful.
The greatest.
Of course. Yeah. So a strong recommend on for both of those completely different shows. And for my plug, I write for a site called Televisions, which is, as you might expect, just all about, like, British TV. And they used to have a weekly podcast. Now they have relaunched it as a special rewatch, where we are rewatching Downton Abbey, which is being rebroadcast in its entirety on PBS in their, like, Sunday 10 p.m. slot. So it is really interesting to go back and rewatch that show. I had not rewatched any of it.
Yeah.
Kept up by watching the films, but I hadn't gone back to rewatch any of the regular seasons. And it's fascinating how, like, this show seemed to want to really, like, dig into class stuff between the upstairs and the downstairs in the first season. And they move steadily and in some cases briskly away from that in later seasons. But it's interesting to see, like, a slightly spikier iteration of that show.
Not the first time I've heard somebody say it has more teeth at the start than you would expect compared to where you end up and what you think about the show nowadays. Where are you in Gilded Age?
I love that completely ridiculous show.
Yeah.
Like, it's in the Gilded Age, I think, suffers from Julian Fellowes, like, infatuation with the notion that the wealthy are actually doing a service to the people who work in their service by helping them. You know, they're giving them employment that's meaningful. It adds, you know, that's how they find meaning in their lives without ever considering, like, Well, would you find meaning in doing that work?
Yeah.
Like, rich person?
Makes more sense when you realize he is 120 years old. And that's just the way he was raised. You know, like, I think that's, he's such a throwback.
Yes, it's completely consistent with who he is as a person. But yeah, I think Gilded Age really benefits from having so much access to, like, every great Broadway actor that they can just pluck out of off the streets of New York and put in their show. But I don't know, Downton has a certain oomph that I like just a tad more.
Yeah, I find that the difference is Americans doing the same thing as their British counterparts is somehow not quite as satisfying. There's something inherently better about posh people in Britain doing their posh things and putting their thumb over everybody else. That doesn't quite play the same way in the Gilded Age. I love the Gilded Age too. We have watch parties for the Gilded Age, but there is, I just like genetically something more satisfying about Downton Abbey there.
Yes. Well, it makes sense because, you know, of course, these posh British people would be putting like their thumb on the scale and their boot upon the neck.
Yeah.
Like Americans sort of definitionally ought not to want to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But.
And yet.
Yeah. In theory.
Mm-hmm. In theory, right. Theory, reality, etc.
Anything else to plug there?
Oh, sure. Yes. So my friend Fania Suhu and I collaborated on a fun issue of our respective newsletters. Hers is called Whatever Nevermind. Mine is the aforementioned by Tara Two Bossy Dames. And it is a roundup of 9 new shows for 80s and 90s Masterpiece and PBS Kids. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. Sarah Dee Bunting.
Hello. I got a press release email for Netflix's new, like, rapid response documentary series, Instadocs, last week and immediately rolled my eyes. Yes, in theory, I agree that when you hear about a potentially excellent documentary and then you have to wait however many years for it to reach fruition, I agree that that's frustrating. Yes, Instadocs comes from an impressive team, executive producers from projects like OJ Made in America and Killer Lies Chasing a True Crime Con Man. But we have properties already that, quote, tackle a wide range of gripping current events, crises, and cultural moments while, quote, arriving at the height of the conversation. We call that the news. You don't have to reinvent the wheel or rename it. We're good. But with that said, I decided to, Dave style, fold my arms and watch the premiere, Alex Murdaugh, Unconvicted, that premiered last Saturday, May 30th. And it's a solid enough first outing. It's a high-profile case. The show understands that its likely audience will not need or sit through a painstaking review of the entire file. So it sticks to what's new in the case and why it matters. And Instadocs did come out quickly. As of the day it dropped, legal filings had been happening less than 2 weeks prior. It gets good access. It's paced pretty well. I mean, it's only half an hour, but there's still a little bit too much of the meditative dirt roads and sweet tea, y'all, shot comps from the Low Country in South Carolina. And it's content to suggest meta conversations about true crime's influence on legal matters, probably because it doesn't have time to underline them and therefore it can't get bogged down in that stuff. But if you don't know the case at all, this isn't a cheat sheet, like catch-up property. It doesn't work for that. It might do that in future iterations. I guess we'll see. But I was sort of positively impressed without thinking that you need to watch it. I do like that it exists. I've been saying for years that the culture should make more room for travel size narrative, short stories, films, chapbooks, zines. I know Instadocs is 100% click chasing, but I'm fine with it. Do something new in a different container. Why not? For my plug, I did write a fuller review of this little property for paid subscribers to the Best Evidence newsletter, and you can find that or sign up at buttondown.com/bestevidencefyi. We'd love to see you.
All right, here's what's coming up on our shows over the next week. This Friday, Extra Extra Hot Great, available to our club members. We'll be talking about Cape Fear, the Apple TV series based on the movie, based on a book. that is available, of course, to club members. If you are not a club member, please go to extrahotgrate.com/club for more info and to sign up. And then everybody can come back here next week. EHG Prime will feature Interview with the Vampire Season 3, the one where he's a rock star and he's like, and then he's like, I want to suck blood. And we're welcoming back Caroline Frankie for that one.
Do that one again.
That's accurate, right? You know, suck some blood. Yeah.
Startlingly good impression.
I mean, we don't need to watch it now. I think I've recapped it pretty much perfectly.
Basically, yeah. You just needed to like throw some audible glitter. Yeah. And that's really the only thing remaining.
So, Sophie, this is a podcast.
Sorry.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. She is back. It is Wendy. Thank you, Wendy. Here we go.
I was a teenage girl in the 80s. Designing Women was a smart show that gave me something to think about and women to look up to. There are two Designing Women episodes that have stuck with me these many years later. The other one, Killing All the Right People, is already in the canon. This one is How Great Thou Art, Season 2, Episode 20. It shows a variety of faith practices, which is realistic for a show set in the American South in the 80s. It allows people who are not Julia to be at the center of an argument, highlighting Charlene and Bernice, neither of whom is considered smart. It gives us a different but believable perspective on Julia, who is terrified into silence at the thought of singing a solo in front of all those people. It tackles an issue that was widely in the culture at the time and gives a perspective that many people may not have been hearing. God, I miss the monoculture. We heard each other. It's funny. Finally, there's the way Hal Holbrook looks at Dixie Carter as she sings. This is a fairly quiet episode that showcases the core cast plus Bernice and uses who they have already been established to be to examine this issue. Nothing big or dramatic happens, but we have a beautiful progression of Charlene becoming more and more sure of herself through the episode. If you believe Julia must have a rant for it to be a truly canon-worthy episode, you will be disappointed. One of the glories of this episode is that Julia does not have a rant. It lets Charlene and Bernice, the naive country girl and the dementia-riddled senior, carry the weight of the argument. Julia does get a song. Word is the more conservative Dixie Carter had an agreement with Linda Bloodworth Thomason that for every liberal rant she did, she would get a song in a future episode. This one is a song episode. I think Carter sells Julia being intimidated by having the solo in this citywide church conference. And it gives us a different Julia than we usually see, a vulnerable Julia. The episode tackles an issue that was widely in the Christian religious culture at the time and gives a perspective that many people may not have been hearing. Again, I miss the monoculture. We heard other perspectives. This clip shows both the pastor's condescension and Bernice's sudden clarity. This one-minute clip, I think, encapsulates the episode.
Excuse me, Reverend, but this scripture you keep using, the one about the deacon has to be the husband of one wife.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't understand how that rules out women being ministers.
Well, what I think it means, in lay terms, is that as soon as you can find a woman who's a man, she'll be eligible.
Excuse me, but I don't think I caught your name at dinner.
I'm Reverend Jim Nunn.
How do you do? Bernice Clifton. Now, you're the one who thinks women shouldn't be singers.
No, Bernice. No, Reverend Nunn thinks women shouldn't be ministers.
Oh, I see. And that's why you were saying the deacon has to be the husband of one wife.
Yes.
I know that passage. My father was a preacher. If I'm not mistaken, it also says the deacon should manage his family well. So I guess that means he has to have children. Do you have children?
Yes, I do.
Lucky for you.
This is a sitcom, and the episode is funny. There are quips and punchlines throughout. The song is great. But even more is the way Hal Holbrook looks at Dixie Carter while she is singing. That had me in tears. Finally, this episode had a reach. My friend in a Southern Baptist seminary watched it in one of his classes when they talked about women in ministry. Southern Baptists have doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on the issue since then. But in the 90s, it was still a question they were discussing, and his professor used this episode as part of the discussion. A year or so ago, I was checking with my office administrator about the licensing of How Great Thou Art. She said something about not encountering the song growing up. She asked me, do you know where I first heard it? I immediately answered, Designing Women? Indeed. It's a memorable episode. It may be Bernice's clearest moment. Jean Smart represents so many of us as Charlene, who doesn't understand why this is even an issue. And it's a great solo by Dixie Carter. I hope this is all enough for you to induct it into the extra hot, great canon.
Thank you, Wendy. Sophie, what did you think of the episode and of Wendy's argument?
I really enjoyed the episode. I had watched Designing Women during its original run, and just watching the opening credit sequence, I felt this intense like rush of sense memories.
Mm-hmm.
And the episode as a whole, I found unexpectedly moving. And I don't know if that is only because of the content. I think it actually probably has a little bit to do with the fact that Hacks, starring the great Jean Smart, just concluded its 5-season run last week. I'm always going to be susceptible to an episode of television where a woman, especially an underestimated woman like Bernice, gets the better of an incredibly smug man. The way they were able to mine humor from a situation that is not at all funny, it just spoke to me. And there was something so wholesome and sweet about the pacing of the show. Like, I have not watched a sitcom from the 80s in so long that I had forgotten that that is how we watched sitcoms all the time for so long. It felt very nostalgic, but it also felt incredibly germane to the current moment that we are in. So yeah, no, I'm a yes for this one.
Sarah.
Yeah, this is a no for me, dog. I think this would have been an excellent tiny canon for like IRL spouses interacting within the universes that they're cast in, because that look at the end really is something. Yeah. But like, we're doing the whole number? I don't know. I'd heard that bargain of Dixie Carter's with the showrunner. That's of interest. I thought this was well performed. I didn't hate spending time with it, but it was very didactic. And then we saw like an entire hymn, and it's just not for me. Granted, my mother's sister was a minister. She was a senior minister at Riverside Church in Manhattan. She was ordained when I was in the first grade. Like, this was a non-issue in my family. My friends in my hometown who were Jewish, they had a woman rabbi in like the late 70s. I understood that other parts of the Baptist conference were really struggling with this, but we were a UCC church and we didn't truck with it. But this show, I feel overall, has not aged very well. I think the point that it treated the concerns of American Southerners of that time straightforwardly and with respect and without the condescension or stereotyping of like some of the stuff from earlier in the 20th century, like the whatever Beverly Hillbillies, that just was like everybody from this entire block of states and two time zones is a hayseed. And I respect that it was important for that reason. A Dixie Carter rant is always fun. The great Jean Smart is amazing. It's nice to see her with all those bangles clacking and all the blush in Atlanta on. These conversations were like done and dusted in my environment before I was even born. So this show does not have legs for me. Tara.
Yeah, I finally finished my Mad About You rewatch, including the weird season from Spectrum. It was only for Spectrum subscribers, but is now on Hulu. So I'm just barely into season 2 of Designing Women now. That was my next watch. And in fact, last night I watched Killing All the Wrong People, and it was too sad to go to bed on. So I had to watch the next one, which was Bernice entering the Mrs. Senior Citizen beauty pageant. And that was the right choice. So anyway, I digress. I get Wendy's point, and I agree that it's feels important when a show like this, that's obviously from a very centrist liberal perspective, treats people of faith like seriously, doesn't treat them like they're mm-hmm. dumb, doesn't yeah. mock them, doesn't even really mock the minister who's clearly wrong in this. Like, there's a lot they could have done to sort of tip the scales. They could have made him, you know, cast someone who looked different, who was more comical or whatever. Looked like mm-hmm. more of a dope, but they don't. He just looks like a, you know, regular dad, I guess. We learned he yeah. is. But I disagree with Wendy that Charlene is supposed to not be smart. I think Charlene is smart. She's just like maybe naive. She's started definitely more Rose Nyland coded. She had came from a family with like a million kids. So she has like an anecdote for every situation. And we hear about her earlier on, like, you know, well, I just went to my psychic and this or that, which, you know, but I think they sort of backed off that. And that was the function that Bernice increasingly filled as they got further into the season, which was smart because Jean Smart is great and we don't want to see her being in that position. But what was crazy to me about this episode is, first of all, it does not make sense for Julia's character that she would be this freaked out about the song. Like, I think if she was really that scared, she would just not do it or ask them to pitch it down. Like, there were a lot of story things about that.
Ask them to pitch it down.
It's not hard. You know, if this is supposed to be like the traveling Wilburys of Southern Baptist choirs, like, you know, everyone should be able to handle it, whatever it is. And if she doesn't want to do it, she doesn't have to do it. She just decline politely. But the other reason is that in a previous episode in season one, Charlene sings at a nightclub. Like, she also sings, and it would have made so much more sense if this was all her. If it was her going through this like journey of disappointment with her pastor letting her down and making her feel second class, to this triumphant moment of being, you know, asserting her faith, making all the great points that she makes in the argument about our great missionaries are women and so forth. So I just felt like from a construction perspective, that was a problem with this episode as well, because they could have just made it more cogent by doing that.
I'm also, now that we're talking about it from that perspective, I think I was expecting for most of the episode for Julia to step back and be like, well, here's my excuse for not doing it.
Right.
I agree with Charlene. And then it's like, well, even if they had like removed all these roadblocks, like, we'll pitch it down. We'll get you some backup. You can, you know, we won't put the camera on you. And then she would have to realize, like, what I really don't want to do is sell out Charlene by giving my imprimatur to this conference that says that women shouldn't be ministers. Like, it doesn't exactly track with her character, I don't think. But
And the other thing, sorry again to disagree with Wendy, but the whole how Hal Holbrook looks at Dixie Carter while she's singing was so self-indulgent.
I am going to try to track it, but I am curious if I'm going to feel as cringy at anything else in the year 2026 as I felt in that moment.
It's so corny to, like, he doesn't appear in any other scene. Like, they just made him huck his ass down to the soundstage to sit and watch her do this and have no lines. Like, I don't even know if he got paid to be in this episode. I just thought that was very, like, I understand there are things you have to apparently do to assuage the ego of your conservative star, but this is not it. I felt embarrassed to be part of that moment.
All right, let's make this official. Sophie, what say you for How Great Thou Art?
I say yes still.
All right, Tara.
As the person who is most recently watching the show and will continue to do so, it's a no for me, but I will try to avenge you by finding another episode that I think I can convince Dave and Sarah to vote for.
We'll see. All right, Sarah, what do you think about this one?
Excellent presentation. I think you took the right angle, but this episode was not it. So no for me. I'm sorry.
So, unfortunately, that means Designing Women, Season 2, Episode 20, How Great Thou Art. You are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time to discover our winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Anna Kendrick. She has been tapped to direct Netflix's adaptation of Taylor Jenkins Reid's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. Reid also wrote Daisy Jones and the Six. And Kendrick also directed Woman of the Hour, which was based on the dating game Killer and sort of like a slice of that experience. I was really knocked out by that movie, not just her direction, but she was in it and her performance in it was amazing. I feel like we don't talk about her as much as we used to, but I reviewed that for Best Evidence also, and we'll link that in the show notes. I am excited to see what she does here.
And loser of the week, Tara Ariano.
Loser of the week is Jorge R. Gutierrez. He is a Emmy winner in the world of animation. He spoke out against AI in animation formerly, and then last week it was announced he was going to be participating in a generated AI series at Amazon called Punky Duck. Was sort of defiant about it, was saying it's because I want this to be artists leading the tech and not tech leading the artists. And I'm going to leave my replies open on Twitter.
I worried about the integrity of Plucky Duck.
Punky Duck, but
Punky
yes.
Punky Duck, even better.
So he was like, I'm leaving my comments open so you can all, you know, get it out of your system, but don't make death threats against my family or whatever. And then the next day it was like, just kidding. I'm leaving the project. Goodbye.
Chunky fuck is no longer.
Don't support death threats, obviously, but it was a very like, oh, I only went in there to get directions on how to get out of there. And the ongoing existence of this Amazon fund is drawing more backlash from the animation community. So, you know, another wonderful win for the world of AI. Fuck you.
Well, speaking about existing in a death threat free zone, do you know what time it is?
Oh, yeah, speaking of fuck you.
It's game time and I'm going to kill you.
No, you're not.
I'll do it. Bow, bow,
bow, bow. Just hugs.
You've been going to bed pretty early lately. I could just sit on a pillow and you'd never know.
Oh, wait. Hang on one sec. Now I'm going to suck some blood. All right, here we go. Today we are playing screen sizes from John Connor's. Oh, Tara's got 1 point. That's the season so far. Today we're playing screen sizes from John Connor's, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt from our store at throughmethods.com. John writes, novels adapted for film are hardly rare, nor are novels adapted for TV, but sometimes a book gets adapted into both. In this game, players are given two actors' names, and those two actors have played the same character, one in a film, one in a TV show, both based on the same novel. So I'm going to give you that information, and then for 3 points, you can provide me with the name of that character, the author of the book they're both from, and the title of the book or series they're both from. You only get one answer, so you have to figure out when you do that. But if I give you the actors, you're like, I can't do it yet. You can start asking for any of those three items. I will give you that, and then the point just decreases after that. So whatever's still on the table, you can answer that. 1 point for each correct piece. Okay. Let's skip Steel Mills today. We'll go straight to Pinky to see who is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. So if he's in the hot seat, then we're going to go to Sarah, then Tara. 27 questions. We're going to do a Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge Zone right in the middle there somewhere. Are we ready to play screen sizes?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's do this.
All right. Here we go. We're starting off with Sophie. Your two actors, and these are in no particular order, I've randomized them, are Natasha Richardson and Elizabeth Moss. Both of those actors played the same character. Who's the character? What is the name of the novel and who wrote it? You can answer all three now, or you can take a hint.
Definitely going to ask for a hint because I can't answer it right now.
Okay, so you can ask for the name of the character, mm-hmm, the author of the book, mm-hmm, or the title of the book. Any one of those, and then answer the other two.
Yeah, hit me with the title.
The title is The Handmaid's Tale. So we want to know the author and the character.
Okay. Well, the author is Margaret Atwood.
You are correct.
And the character.
I will accept two answers.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Ofglen?
Yeah, close, but not quite. Off-red.
No. Off-red.
Off-red.
Yes, and or June.
We June. Could or June. It. Yeah, I had no, having not watched the show.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a laugh riot.
Yeah.
Mind bank, yes. Yeah. I've read the book several times.
It's what happens when people denied the Designing Women canon entry into the canon. This is the next step.
Oh, no.
Yes, that's this right. Is the,
so
the
smart
logical
enough, you
consequence.
Three.
Shit.
Okay. Sarah Bunting. Gary yes. Oldman, Alec Guinness, Genuine Class. Gary Oldman, Alec Guinness both played the same character in a TV show or miniseries or something like that.
Oh my God.
Fuck. Can I have the title, please?
The title is Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I didn't guess what I was going to guess. Blah. Who wrote that shit? Is that John Le Carré?
Yeah, it is. Do you know the character? Seems like a happy fellow.
George... something that starts with an S. George Smart.
Seems like a happy fellow because his name is George Smiley.
Yes, fuck. All right, well, 1 point.
All right, Tara.
What if it was Jackson Lamb? Let's just take a minute to imagine Alec Guinness laying down some huge farts. Mm-hmm.
Feel the force, Luke. All right. Kate Winslet, Tara.
Yeah.
Joan Crawford.
Mildred Pierce.
Yes. In?
Mildred Pierce.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And author. Who is the author? Is it Daphne du Maurier?
James yes. M. Kane.
Oh, I was way off.
Sure.
One letter short of being a cake magnate. Mm. All right, back to Sophie. You've got Keira Knightley and Jennifer Ely.
It's Ely.
Sorry.
Yes, who will make a glorious appearance in The Vampire Lestat. That they are playing Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice, written by Jane Austen.
Yes, full 3 points.
Love to
nicely
see it.
Done. Nice. All right, we'll do that third ding. Nicely done, Sarah D. Bunting. You got Anthony Michael Hall and Christopher Walken.
Okay, it's The Dead Zone by Stephen King. The character's name is Johnny, and that's all I got.
I'm going to give that to you because John Robert Johnny Smith is the answer. So I think if you got the Johnny part, you're good. That's what he was known as.
Thank you.
Nicely done. There's a sweep for you, Tara.
Yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal, everybody's favorite caveman looking actor, and Harrison Ford.
Presumed Innocent.
You're correct.
Nice.
Character and author on the table.
Is the author Scott Turow?
Yes. 2 points.
I don't remember the character name.
Rusty Sabish.
Sure.
Yep.
We are all tied up, you guys.
Nicely done. Yeah. All right.
Woo!
Good job. All right, Sophie.
Yes.
Basil Rathbone and Benedict Cumberbatch, a.k.a. Cinnamon Toast and Crunch.
They both played Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
In the Sherlock Holmes Mysteries, or just Sherlock, by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
That's correct. Although apparently you can't call him Sir after they die.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
The Sir title goes away when you die. I read that somewhere. Now I'm worried it's not true and I'm going to look like an idiot, but here we go.
So it's Alfred some guy Tennyson?
That's right.
Or is it only Sir and not
No, Lord? It's anywhere. Sarah D. Bunting, Louise Fletcher, Sarah Paulson.
Oh, that's Nurse Ratched. In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Yep, that's the source.
By Ken Kesey?
Yes, nicely done. Gorgeous. 3 points. Back to Tara.
Yes.
James McAvoy, Daniel Craig. Good luck.
Rude.
What's the title?
Two titles here I'll give you.
Sure.
I think the actual title is Golden Compass. The actual particular ones. This is the Dark Material series.
Right.
Sorry, his Dark Material.
I don't know that author, and I don't know the character.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
We were looking for anybody to know?
Lord Asriel, and it's Philip Pullman.
Yes, nicely done.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
All right, here's your actual question, Sophie. We got Jim Carrey, Neil Patrick Harris. Both played the same character. Shared source material on the written page. Written by somebody.
By a person. I will take the title of the book or series.
It is called A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Okay. So they both played Count Olaf. And the author of the book is Lemony Snicket.
You are correct for 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
You've got Maya Hawk, Hockey, and Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah. Do I, though? Could I have the title of the book or series, please?
Sure. We are talking about Little Women.
Okay, well, that's Louisa May Alcott. I'll take that one.
character is? Rolling the bones here, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Does it help if I do the meme? Women?
Can we give you the last name to help you jog your memory?
That's cute.
Yeah, thanks. I know that much.
I want to tell you something. Could I have the first actor again, please?
Maya Hawke.
And Saoirse Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, Hawk.
Hawk.
Hack.
Hawk-E. Yeah, that's... We're spelling with an E.
Hawk. I don't know. I don't know which one she
Throw
was.
Throw it out there.
Beth.
You're looking for Joe. Joe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As long as it wasn't that bitch Amy, but I'll take the point.
Tara.
Yeah.
Lily James, Audrey Hepburn.
Title.
Title is War and Peace.
Okay. Wow. Well, that's Leo Tolstoy.
Hello. Yeah. Uncle Leo.
I don't know the character.
Natasha Rostova.
Okay.
So you got 1 point. Back to Sophie. We've got for you Matt Damon and Andrew Scott.
They both play Tom Ripley in The Talented Mr. Ripley. By, oh boy, Menace. Patricia Highsmith.
Yes,
nice. 3 points,
nicely done. Bing, bang, boom. Sarah, Warwick Davis, and together, Eddie Izzard and Simon Pegg, apparently.
Huh.
Those are your clues.
Why not?
One from TV, yeah. One from the movie, playing the same character from the same source by the same author.
And how wonderful for all three of them. Could I have the title of the book, please?
This is the Narnia series.
Okay. C.S. Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
The Lion? The Lion?
No.
Call back.
Thank you.
No, you can't cut it.
No, I can't cut it. Fuck. Fuck you, sir. Anybody know it?
No.
This is...
No.
Never read those books.
Rip-a-cheap?
Rip-a-cheap. Rip-a-cheap.
Rip-a-cheap. Okay.
I never read any of those.
Is Reepy Cheap like a little character?
I think he's a little mouse guy.
Okay, all right.
Okay, okay. Sure.
Don't know why we need two people.
Even if you don't ever want to read those books, there is an amazing one-shot story on Archive of Our Own that is Anthony Bourdain, like No Reservations, goes to Narnia. It is incredible.
Awesome. Wow. Sophie, will you please put a Love link it. To that in the doc so we can put it in
Absolutely.
The show notes? Because that feels very important.
Nice.
Absolutely. Yes, it is a very important cultural artifact. It's, oh my God, it's incredible. Yes, I'll be happily leave the link.
Very good. Tara, take us into our score break. Christopher Lee, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Dracula?
Wait.
Blue.
Okay.
Character?
Dracula? Okay, but what's his honorific?
Count Dracula?
Yeah, Count Dracula. All right, phew.
And the author... It's not LaRue, that's Phantom of the Opera. Free hint in case that comes up in the future. I can't remember.
Seriously?
I seriously can't.
Okay, I'm going to bing you on this one, but before Sarah...
Can I get a Dave point if I do it in Menon style? Yeah. Bram Stoker.
God damn it.
Francis Ford Coppola presents
Stupid.
Bram Stoker.
If you had said two-year-old, then I would have gotten it.
All right. We are over halfway done. Let's get the scores.
Okay. I am in last place with 7. Mm-hmm. Sarah D. Bunting has 9. Sophie killing the game.
Nice.
12 points.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Wow. So doesn't happen that often. Tara Ariano, you were in the Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Pick a number.
Good luck.
1 to 6.
4.
All right. You have chosen Trivial Pursuit Totally 80s.
Okay.
Ooh.
I will read you 6 TV questions.
Dallas.
From...
Yes. Go on.
All right. If any of them are Dallas, I'm going to give you the automatic point. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
No, you don't have to do that.
If you get 3, I'm going to give you 2 points.
Okay.
And if you sweep it, I'm going to give you 4.
Okay.
Which Love Boat character was surprised to find he had a love child named Vicky?
Doc. It's playing the odds.
Captain Stubing. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's fine.
I wanted it to be Tattoo.
That's Fantasy Island.
That's Fantasy Island.
But that's how they got there. The Love Boat dropped people off.
That's right.
Island.
There you go.
What show featured bailiffs named Selma Hacker, Florence Kleiner, and Roz Russell?
Night Court.
Night Court is correct. All right. You only need two more. What was the name of the classified time travel project supervised by Sam Beckett?
Ugh. We watched so much of that show and I don't remember.
Wow.
I don't recall.
Really?
We really don't.
Blah. That is, anybody? Quantum Leap.
Oh, the show. Wait.
That's the project and the show.
Oh,
same thing.
Quantum Leap. I thought the project had a different name. Okay. Yeah, shit.
Yeah. Fourth question coming at you. You need two of these three to get your 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
What were the Olsen twins the only kids not to do at their audition, winning them a Full House gig?
Cry.
Correct. Yes. All right. You need one of these last two.
Okay.
Oh, so close, Tara. So close. What nighttime soap followed Dallas on Friday nights for much of the 80s?
Knott's Landing. Fuck!
Falcon Crest.
Is it Falcon Crest? Yeah.
Falcon Crest was on CBS? I always thought it was wow. ABC.
All right. So you need this one, your last question, to get you 3 points.
Yep.
What Sesame Street superhero was always armed with carrots and celery? Never heard of this character before.
Oh, no. Well, then it's not Super Grover. That's the only one I could think of. I don't know.
Anybody know? Apparently, there was a Sesame Street character called Captain Vegetable.
Okay.
All right. Sure. Well, no points for you, Tara. Sorry.
Damn.
Jeez.
Let's get back to the game. Sophie, you're back up. We've got Alan Ritchson and Tom Cruise. Both played the same character from the same source material. We need the author, the character, and the book title or series title.
Can you give me the character?
Yeah, I'm no longer accepting book titles as hints, so thank you. There we go. You have to ask for one of the other ones. That's just the way it's going to roll from now on.
Okay.
All right, so you asked for?
The character.
Jack Reacher.
Oh, okay.
Title and author, please. I mean, I made a big to-do out of it, but she found a way around it.
Mm-hmm.
Their sharp legal TV mind.
That's definitely me.
Can I just say, you're the most relaxed guest we've ever had. She's literally lying on her bed right now doing this podcast, and I am impressed.
Well, now that all of the, like, you know, really intense opinion giving is over, now it's just trivia, which, as Sarah and Tara know, is one of my favorite things in the world. So
I envy you. I'm on a microphone. I can't just hang out with a headset. If I could, I would.
We have one in here. You could.
To rewind, we just said Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher.
So take a stab at the book series name.
So the problem is, I thought that I knew who that was, and now I'm not convinced. Is it just Reacher?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Jack Reacher series, Reacher series. Yep.
Yeah.
There are seriously 40 books, and they're all in my fucking house right now. Man. Leave it at the airport. God.
All right. And who wrote them? And I'm going to say, this sounds like a really impressive feat. Very young author.
Now I can only say Babyface.
You're close.
Which I know is not the correct answer.
I'm saying you're not that far off.
Would it be great if Kenneth Edmonds, like Babyface Edmonds, had written these books?
Yes.
I
so
would be
many
so happy.
Talents, that one.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, who's the author?
Lee Child.
Lee Child, yes. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
All right, Sarah, this is question 17.
Oh, it's Brady Eagle.
Your two actors are Oscar Isaac, William Hurt.
How?
And just to remind you, you could either ask for the author or the character, but not the title. Because I'm a big meanie.
Both.
Oscar Isaac and William Hurt.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know why, but I can't. So could I get the character name?
The character name is Duke Leto Atreides.
I'll take the author.
Frank Herbert.
Dune.
Dune is correct for 1 point, yes. Tara.
Yep.
Second appearance of Mr. Harrison Ford. What the fuck is this in here twice? Everybody else can favorite. Harrison Ford and Justin Theroux.
That's the Mosquito Coast. The book is... Oh, that is the book and the show. The character... Allie Fox?
Yes. Bye.
Wow. Last name is Theroux.
Yeah. I'm going to give you that. That's fine.
Okay.
Paul.
Paul.
Drew. Yeah.
Oh.
Which is his father, grandfather? Like
his uncle, I think.
Uncle. Oh, okay. Keeping it in the family.
Yep.
Sounds like nepotism to me. This is question 19. for Sophie, and we're bringing back Tom Cruise, pairing him with Sam Reed.
Oh, they've both played the vampire Lestat.
In
Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, we'll cut
by that. Anne Rice.
Yes, 3 points.
Nice.
Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting, Guy Pearce. Ow. And George C. Scott.
Not where I thought that was going.
Ah, my groin. That one.
Jesus Christ.
That's a tiny cannon. You should put that on your list.
Oh my God, yeah.
Football in the groin.
Yeah, I'm writing that down right now.
Pierce.
Football.
And George C. Scott.
In the.
In.
Groin.
It's not football in the groin, Sarah. Don't answer that.
No, I.
All right. Once again, you've got Guy Pearce. Ow. And George C. Scott. Football in the groin. Ow. You can ask for a hint. I can give you the author or the name of the character they both played.
I'm going to try the character.
All right. The character is Ebenezer Scrooge. Good luck with the rest of this.
Okay. Why do I want to say A Christmas Story? That's ridiculous.
You shoot your eye out, Ebenezer.
Was also a book.
Charles Dickens.
Yes, we'll give you that.
Thank you. What the fuck is the actual name of it?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I know.
Sarah.
Tiny Tim's Tiny Toons Christmas? Yep. If it's not A Christmas Story, I don't actually remember the title.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's your Bram Stoker moment.
Can I pull Martin Chuzzlewit? Sure can. Do I remember
All right,
this?
What is it? No. Let Sarah know.
Christmas Carol.
Shame me.
It's a Christmas Carol.
Oh, Carol. Well, Carol. Fuck her.
Tara.
Yep.
Morthiv Clark. Morthiv mm-hmm. Clark.
Yep.
Kate Blanchett.
Okay. It's The Lord of the Rings.
Yep. Bye.
J.R.R. Tolkien.
And they played.
It's not Arwen. I don't know any of the other bitches in that movie. Sorry. Never seen it. And I never will.
Wow. Wow. Martin Chuzzlewit.
Who is it?
Sophie, do you know who it is?
It's Galadriel.
Oh, thank you. Correct.
Yes.
I have heard that before.
You got 2 points.
Okay.
All right. This one is to Sophie. You have Billy Bob Thornton and Kyle Chandler.
Oh, they both played Coach Eric Taylor in Friday Night Lights.
By
famed Philadelphia sports writer Buzz Bissinger.
Yes, 3 points.
And shopping
nicely
addict.
Done.
Oh, that's what he's famed for. Thanks.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Donald Sutherland and Alan Alda. Donald Sutherland, Alan okay. Alda.
That's MASH.
Okay. I'm going to give it to you, but do you have any idea what the full title of that novel was?
After MASH?
No.
It's
no,
like something,
I don't.
Something of an army doctor. They talked about it on
oh,
Overdue,
right. Okay.
And I don't remember. It was not even that long ago either.
MASH, a novel about three army doctors.
That's
the full title. All okay. right. So we need the character name and the author. Still on the board.
He played Hawkeye Pierce. They played Hawkeye Pierce. And the author is... I don't know who the author is.
Boy,
I've read it, too.
This guy's parents did not like him. Mm. Richard Hooker. Good old
Oof.
Dick Hooker.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
The Hook.
Oh, good boy. So you got 2 points there. Nicely done. Tara?
Yep.
Javier Bardem and Robert Mitchum.
That's Cape Fear.
Yes, but the book is called...
Oh, the book has a different name?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Cafe
Fear? I'm going to give it to you. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they did that thing where they renamed the book that you could buy in the store because people are like, I don't mm-hmm. know what The Executioners is. I only know Cape Fear.
It's okay. Like The Irishman used to be I Heard You Paint Houses.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're going to give you that.
Okay.
But who is the character? Who is the author?
I hope it's the same from the Robert De Niro version because he played Max Cady.
Correct.
Okay. Is this our friend James M. Cain again?
It's not. I'm going to give you a clue. No points on the board for this
sure.
one. This is Canada's fourth prime minister.
I don't know.
Follow wow. the sequence. He's our fourth prime minister.
I don't know.
We're talking about John D. MacDonald.
Oh.
They pulled the fourth
oh,
one
yeah.
out of the bat.
Good one.
John A, B, C, and then finally John D. MacDonald.
Cute.
Yeah, it was very cute. 2 points. Everybody's last question coming at you. I would like the scores.
Okay. Sarah has 13. I have 14. Sophie has 19.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody can catch her, but let's play it out. Sophie, last actors who played the same character are Tim Curry, Bill Skarsgård.
They played Pennywise?
Yes. Pennywise the what?
The clown.
Uh-huh. In what? Name it. Name it.
It.
Yeah, okay.
By Stephen King.
You are correct. 3-point sweep to Gorgeous. End your run. Sarah D. Bunting, you've got Jeremy Irons and Rachel Weisz.
We watched it for this podcast. Yeah, I did not continue watching it, by the way.
No, I didn't either.
But what was it?
It was...
You don't know, you can ask for a hint.
Can I have the author, please?
The author is Barry Wood. B-A-R-I.
Yeah, no, that did. That did nothing. Mm-mm. For me, and name of the character is Dr.
I mean, probably.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Vagina.
Yeah.
Dr. It's pronounced Wagina. And the title of the
That's
book
true,
is Vincent John Cocktoasting. I don't remember.
All right.
I want to say Reversal of Fortune, and it's blotting out every single other thing.
It's not that.
Which was written by Dershowitz, did you know?
I'm just going to give you the characters' names, just so you can have them before you guess at the title of the book. Elliot and Beverly Mantle.
Yeah, I can't pull the title.
Okay.
Tower Records Disease.
All right, what's the title of the production from movie and TV then, everybody?
Dead Ringers.
Anybody know what the actual book is called?
It's not Dr. Vagina,
no. It is Twins.
Oh.
Which is also the movie with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger from the same source material.
That was what was in my mind, and I'm like, don't say it, but it was correct.
You're so much smaller than I am. When you came out of mom's vagina.
Wagina.
All right, Tara, wrap us up. We got Freddie Highmore and Anthony Perkins.
They both played... Oh, my God. I'm totally blanking. Okay, I'm going to come back around to it. It's Psycho.
Psycho is the name of the source material.
The author?
Yeah.
I do not know.
He started a very famous tax service for you.
Aloysius TurboTax.
Sarah Boyd.
Robert Block.
Block, sure.
Oh my God, why can't I think of his fucking name?
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Everybody do it to help.
Oh my God.
Scream.
Norman Bates.
There you go. See, the reread was helpful.
All right, that is regulation. Final scores, please.
Sarah D. Bunting finished with 13. I had 16. Sophie smashed it, 22 points.
Wow, nicely done, Sophie. All right.
Someone didn't have a brain lesion today. It was Sophie.
We've got a tiebreaker. Let's play it. Okay. Winner gets a steel meal for future use. First person to... this is going to be chaos. Anybody can yell anything part of the answer they want. I'm going to try to make sense of it. In theory, you each could get 1 point here.
Okay.
In theory, somebody could wrap it all up. Here we go. Jack Nicholson, Steven Weber.
Oh, Jack Torrance.
Nice. Stephen King.
The Shining.
Yeah, okay, I got 2 for Tara, 1 for Sophie. Dead. Yes. Nicely done. All right, congratulations, Sophie.
Thank you.
Valued guess.
Woo.
While relaxing, no less. Well done.
Yes, that's right. That's the key to game time victory.
I would encourage everyone to try it next time.
I'm pretty sure she had a little micro nap between questions there, too. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We packed up our boxes of... Oh, no, I can't say that. That's in the third episode. Beep! Soviet censorship. And moved on to... and moved into the For All Mankind spinoff Star City before going around the dial with stops at Make That Movie, The Tower, Deli Boys, and Instadogs. Wendy's prayers for a canon win for designing women's How Great Thou Art was denied by an indifferent god. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sophie was the winner of this week game time from John. Next up, it's Kate Fear on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I need bigger shoulder pads.
Sarah Deep Bunting.
We made no mention of them fucking.
And Sophie Brookover.
I will kill more Nazis than you can ever imagine.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
We're going to try this again and then again and again and again. And hopefully you won't kill us because this is real life.
Yes.
Good.